Newsflash. SRN, being a Christian network, doesn't mention Passover or months. That could care less about Bukurim, but does have a special warning on Easter lilies, saying that Easter lilies could be fatal to your cat. Well, let me tell you, Easter is fatal to your soul. If you celebrate Easter on an ongoing basis and don't come to the point where you stop celebrating Easter, stop celebrating Christmas, stop going to church, stop worshiping God, stop doing so on a Sunday, stop going to Bible studies and reveling in Paul's malarkey, unless you come to a place where you stop doing those things and start observing the Torah, prophets, and Psalms and come to embrace Yahweh's truth, you will die. The ongoing practice of Easter is fatal to your soul. Now, this is what the Christian who wrote about these four blood moons, Hagee, said next. The third occurrence. Now, so far, he is 046. There, he has mentioned, he failed to mention the two blood moons, that the four blood moons that took place during a time that he doesn't want to cover because he can't ascribe any event to them. Those are in the 700s and the 800s CE. And he is he has missed the timing of the Spanish decree by 1 to 2 years, and it's not relevant. And he has missed the timing of Israel becoming a nation by 1 to 2 years. And while that's relevant, if you miss it by 1 to 2 years in arrears, it isn't relevant. So he's 046, and it's actually worse than that, because there were extraordinarily important events that took place in 33 CE, in 70 CE, and in 133 to 135 CE, as well as in between 1932 to 1945, and then ongoing. So he is worse than that. All of those important events he missed. No, so, you know, if there's not a blood moon associated with an important event, and if there's blood moons that aren't associated with any event, then rather than being 046, he's now, what, 0 for 10? 0 for 10. It's not like he's 1 for 1. Isn't this great? Or 2 for 2? Isn't this a profound coincidence? No, he's 0 for 10. The third occurrence was 1967 and 1968, when the Six Days War took place, unifying the city of Jerusalem for the first time in 2,000 years, a monumental prophetic event, writes Hagee. Actually, it didn't unify Jerusalem, the city. And Moshe Dayan, at the end of the Six-Day Wars, which, by the way, is, you know, I'm not a wizard math, but a Six-Day War that started in 1967 is over in 1967, and therefore a blood moon in 1968 is in arrears and therefore of no value whatsoever. But beyond that, Moshe Dayan awarded the Temple Mount, which is the most important part of Jerusalem, the heart of the land, to the Muslims. And East Jerusalem remained in the hands of the Muslims. So even this isn't true. So here we go again. The 1967 April eclipse, the epicenter was New Zealand, not visible in Israel. The fall 67 eclipse, visible epicenter in Hawaii, not visible in Israel. The 1968 eclipse, epicenter is Amazon. Visible to swaths, not visible in Israel. 1968 fall eclipse, epicenter is Hawaii. Opposite side of the world from Israel. Oops. I guess that God of Christianity is old. He's got the jittery hands, must have Parkinson's, is not so good on his aim anymore. Now, what's more, he says, this is Hagee writing, the next four blood moon tetrad falling on the Hebrew holy days is set to occur starting in April 2014, only the fourth time in the last 500 years. Now, by the way, he doesn't go back 2,000 years because he's clueless as to what the important days are on Yahweh's calendar. Absolutely clueless. And he says first is April 15th. Well, yes, last night was a blood moon, but Passover was the evening of the 13th at sundown. In fact, missed it by 2 days in terms of the blood moon. Next, he talks about October 8th of 2014 at the Feast of Tabernacle, and actually Tabernacle is on the 9th. And then he has April 4th of 2015, and actually it's the 2nd is when Passover is celebrated that year. And then on the 28th is the Feast of Tabernacles, that he says that this occurs on the 28th when Tabernacles is the evening of the 27th. Again, not very good at reading Yahweh's calendar. So much for being a sign from God regarding Israel. The April 15th lunar eclipse that he's talked about will only be visible in the Americas, not in Israel. The October 8th lunar eclipse has Israel in the center of the area that will not be visible. And the April 4th lunar eclipse of 2015 is the same and will be visible only in the Americas and Asia. The only one of the four eclipses that is visible in Israel will be on September 28th of 2015, where it will be seen most everywhere. And they are extremely common. There are 12 total eclipses occurring from 2014 to 2022. There were two in 2000, two in 2001, so much for the once every 500 year theory. From May 16th of 2003 to October 28th of 2004, there were four total lunar eclipses, then there's four blood moons. There were also two each in 2007, March 3rd and August 28th, and two in the year 2008, February 21st and August 16th. Five have occurred between June 26th of 2010 and June 4th of 2012. Now, for his, he doesn't mention these, but there are a future set of blood moons that are interesting to us. Yahweh is going to return on the Yom Kippur in 2033. That will be year 6,000 Yah. Now, that is October 2nd of 2033. So if you're going to use a blood moon to announce this as a sign, it would have to occur in 2032 and around Pesach in 2033. Now, he doesn't mention these. Now, this would be important. God has said that that he's going to turn the moon to red, to blood, as a precursor to his arrival. So that's when we would expect one. That's the only one worth writing about. On October 25th of 2032, there will be one. Unfortunately, the epicenter is in Australia. And Pesach is on March 25th. That does coincide. Unfortunately, the viewable area is in the wrong part of the world. On October 18th of 2032, blood moon is centered on the Sinai, I mean perfectly visible, therefore, from Yisrael. But unfortunately, Sukkah, that year is on September 9th, and this is occurring on October 18th, so it's a little more than a month off. Oops. On April 14th of 2033, there's a blood moon on Pesach. Pesach is the evening of April 13th, the day of the 14th. And so there actually is a blood moon on Matzah. That would be relevant. And if you're going to pick a date and say, I'm going to turn the moon to red, and you want to pick a date, that would be the date on Matzah in 2033. And guess what? On Matzah, April 14th of 2033, there is a blood moon. That would be the date. Why? Because on Sukkah of 2033, Yahushua will already be here. Yahweh arrives on Yom Kippurim, 5 days before this. And so while there would have been a blood moon, it's over the Central Pacific, on Sukkah, on the 7th and 8th of October of 2033, Yahweh is already here. No, it's still an interesting thing in terms of coinciding, so that you do have a blood moon for visible in Israel on Passover, Matzah of 2033, and again on Sukkah in 2033. So, interesting to think about. There is a that would be a fulfillment of prophecy because God said that the blood moon would occur prior to His arrival. That's a perfect sign. Therefore, He's told us what it's for. He has the sign in advance. The sign is well explained and in prophecy, so that when you see it, you will recognize that's what it means, because He told us. That's perfect. That's the only one of all of them that is relevant. And guess what? Haggai doesn't even mention it. It's lost. Then he says, what is the, this is Haggai's words, what is the prophetic significance of these events? Well, there is, well, the one that I've mentioned is a prophetic significance. He doesn't mention it, of course. He says, over the last 500 years, these lunar events are all fall on holy days, were an announcement of the time of tears and tribulations that ended in tremendous national triumph for the Jewish people, says Haggai. No, it's not true. Not a single word of that is true. The opposite of that is true. He says there are no solar or no solar of lunar accidents. Every heavenly body is controlled by the unseen hand of God to send signals to humanity of coming events. That's the nature of the Christian God. It is why atheists and agnostics, thinking people, aren't Christians. It's good that they aren't Christians, because Christianity is a pile of lies. But this is the reason that unfortunately thinking agnostics and atheists think that God cannot be known, because Christians claim to speak for God and they make Him look stupid. You know, there isn't an eclipse, not one, that is the unseen hand of God. Not one. It's a natural astronomical occurrence. It's simply physics, my friend. Everything this man said is a lie. Moreover, he plagiarized it. It was back in 2008 that Mark Blitz, who is another lost soul, but lost for another reason, by blending Pauline Christianity and Rabbinic Judaism together, came up with the theory, and at least to Mark's credit, proposed it more honestly than did the Christian Haggai. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Larry has joined us here. I want to share something at the beginning, and then I want to continue a little bit over what we were discussing yesterday on Pesach, because Pesach is part of Matzah. Today we're celebrating Matzah, unyeasted bread, but it is part of an integrated celebration that includes Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, Passover, unyeasted bread, and firstborn children, all during a period of 7 days. And we'll speak also to the 7 days. Now, what I shared was there's one blood moon that is actually meaningful. On Matzah and Passover, it occurs on the 14th. Passover begins on the 13th. It goes through the 14th. Matzah begins on the evening of the 14th continues through the 15th of 2033. Year 2033 is year 6000 Yah. Year 33, when the first four Moed Mikre were fulfilled by the set apart spirit and by Yosha, that was year 4000 Yah. That's why it's proclaimed and announced in the fourth day of creation. So there will be a blood moon on, of all days, Passover. Now, let's consider what Yahweh says. I am Yahweh. The blood will exist for you as a sign on the homes where you, by way of relationship, are at that time. So when I see the blood, I will choose to literally pass over you on that account. God is explaining the sign of the blood. He's equating it to Passover. And on Passover, in the year of His return, in advance of His return, there will be a blood moon. It's another confirmation that Yahweh gets all of the details right. Now, even to further this, in Yoel, Yoel means Yahweh is God. Second chapter, 30 and 31st statements. Yahweh is saying, and I will show wonders in the heavens. The sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the coming and great and awesome day of Yahweh. Now, in this particular case, while it is true that the great and awesome day of Yahweh can either be matzah in the midst of Pesach, matzah, and Bukurim, or in Yom Kippurim, which is the principal day when Yahweh is returning, but also Sukkah is the most awesome of days because it's when we get to camp out with Yahweh. The fact is that God has told us about the strike of an asteroid, of the effect of volcanoes and of landslides leading to enormous tsunamis, and a human nuclear holocaust, all of which transpire during the last 3 years of the tribulation, which collectively will turn the earth into the conditions explained in the nuclear winter. The sun will not permeate the sky, the atmosphere. And the smoke and debris that would be seen, and I don't know if any of you have seen been near a terrible forest fire where the smoke comes up. The sun is actually turned red. So if you had a thin veiling of this, the moon would be turned red. But God has explained what the sign is for. He's told us when he's coming back, which is in year 6,000 Yah, on Yom Kippurim. And he's told us that the awesome day will be the celebration of Sukkah, when we begin a 1,000-year celebration of life with him. In 2033, year 6,000 Yah. And in fact, there will be a blood moon to announce it. So, in the midst of their lies, one who was diligent could find the truth. But, Larry, the thing that bothers me about this is that both of those guys are selling books promoting deceptions. And deceptions that are extraordinarily easy to prove errant. And yet people will pay to be deceived. Now we have Larry on the line, but for some reason he's not coming through. We hope we fix the technical issue. But it is God has told us what's going to occur. He's explained it. He's detailed it. He has predicted it. He has provided information so that we would understand these signs. And yet, we instead prefer to have our ears tickled by the likes of religious proponents. It is a sad, sad day. It's a sad day also because of the likes of SRN, who provides the news for this and all GCN programs, promoting the myths of Easter and Christmas and holidays, which are purely pagan. We'll return in a moment. It is pretty amazing that these two Christian authors created the illusion that God was providing a sign whereby there was nothing signified by God in advance, explaining what the sign was going to be. After the events that actually occurred, not in any way consistent with the history of seminal events in Israel's history. And they wrote a book talking about those signs, including the two that will occur this year and next. And they missed the only relevant sign.
Oh, by the way, a very good find that 2033, year 6,000 Yah, that on Passover there will actually be a blood moon over Yisrael. Of course, they missed that, which would be the only relevant one.
I think it's one of two that are relevant, because now as I think of the second one that year, it's also relevant. But, of course,
now,
the most relevant.
You're talking about Sukkah, though, both on 2033.
Yeah, and actually, the Earth's atmosphere will be translucent again. It'll be perfect again. All the religious artifacts will be removed between Yom Kippurim in 2033 and Sukkah in 2033. And so the blood moon that will begin the celebration of the thousand years of life as it was in the Garden of Eden on Earth, beginning on Sukkah and year 6000 Yah, 2033, that during that particular time, which is a Friday evening, that during that particular time, the first moon that we're going to witness of the start of Yah's celebration is going to be a total eclipse. We're going to, you know, it's kind of God's way, I think, of saying, you know, for a thousand years, I want you to enjoy all that there is to see and learn in this universe. And one of the more interesting sights is a total eclipse. And so we're going to start the thousand years off right with the first day of the thousand years, the first night being a total eclipse.
Well, you might be saying, too, there, you know, all the sun worship is gone.
Yeah.
That might be another statement being made there. I just think, you know, sun worship is so incorporated into so much religious activity, like Ishtar is an example coming up here.
But let's not miss the profound affirmation that is being provided here. In the day where the blood is a sign, the moon will be blood in the year of Yahweh's return. Very uncommon for a full eclipse, or therefore a blood moon, to fall right on Passover. It does. In 2033, it's the last of Passover before its return. It is the event where the blood is a sign.
And that is amazing, by the way.
It's truly, truly amazing. And the fact that on the first day of eternity with Yahweh, and camping out with him on Sukkah, there will be another right on the right date.
And that will be a full moon, too.
Yeah, and so it is indeed an exciting affirmation. And yet here are these two guys promoting Christianity, although one is promoting a blend of Christianity and Rabbinic Judaism. The only thing that was important, they missed.
Yeah, they came up with a bunch of irrelevant blood moons after the fact.
Yes.
And last I knew, a sign had to do with something that was going to happen in the future, not something that had happened.
Yeah, most signs I have noticed along life's way not only occur before the off-ramp, but they have writing on them. They explain something. There's no explanation on these signs.
These are just blood moons showing up in various parts of the planet.
God said nothing about them
from the perspective of Israel.
God said nothing about them, so they're blank, and they're after the fact.
It's very weird. I don't even know why anybody buys it. But I know you don't get on social media but after they came out with this book, there were all these blood moon, blood moon, blood moon.
Oh, of course.
And I took off the Bless Yahweh site, one of your things where you went through this whole blood moon and said, look, it's a farce, and just threw it up there.
Yes.
Quite a few people liking it. I mean, but they need to understand that this blood moon book is just it's a farce.
Either one of the two. And the reason I decided to do this again is that a guy that I've had a business relationship with for years is the central proponent promoting the book by Mark Blix called Blood Moons. And so I've got two people that are going on a cruise where he's the speaker, where he's promoting his books. And I have people that know the Torah that are still saying, boy, this is really fascinating. It can't be just a coincidence. And you're saying, come on, folks, think. I mean, it's a pile of rubbish. If you're not willing to think, then you can be easily bamboozled. And I think that's why, all the way through Yahweh's testimony, he's constantly encouraging us, A, to be observant, to listen to what he has to say, to closely examine and carefully consider what he has to say, to be observant, and then once we yada know, make proper intelligence, discerning connections, exercising good judgment so that we understand. And if you make the wrong connections, you get religion. If you make the right connections, you get relationship.
You know, I know you're very well aware that there's many words that in Paleo Hebrew that have more than one meaning. So you have to think about, you know, what those meanings might say.
Yeah, a great example is Anah, which is used in conjunction with many of the invitations to meet with God, but it's paramount in Yom Kippurim. And the first 10 definitions of Anah, first 12, are about answering an invitation, answering a summons, making a declaration. And so it's an answering kind of thing. You're responding. And there's about 5 or 6 definitions that follow in, you know, 13th, 14th, 15th, you know, place that deal with afflicting, which is to abase oneself. And so, English translations,
takes a low road every time.
Every time. And they pick for Yom Kippurim that we're to afflict our soul. Now, by the way, you know, your soul is not a physical entity.
Yeah, you can't be afflicted by you getting on your knees.
That is correct. You know, you can't afflict your soul. And the idea that the day of reconciliation, Yom Kippurah means reconciliation, it's the day of reconciliation. The idea that we are going to reconcile our relationship with Yahweh, which means we get to stand with Him and be with Him by debasing that part of us that would be allowed into His proximity is just the antithesis of what He's saying. And so why in the world would someone choose a meaning that contradicts everything that God has to say, and yet every English translation goes with the low road?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the easier things, and I just like to do this real quick. You know, we've all seen the beginning of knowledge is the fear of the Lord. Yeah, I know we've all seen that garbage.
Yes.
First of all, Yahweh's name isn't the Lord. He can't stand being called Lord. And secondly, he says this in Yasha Yahu, which only goes to prove that all the religious copy edits talking about fear of him have to be wrong.
Right.
Then Yahweh said, for so much as these people approach me with their mouths and with their lip service, yet they've removed their hearts from me because their yirah, fear, towards me exists because it is taught from man-made traditions learned by rote. And it's very easy to see where fear comes from, because we can look at Hosea 13:1. When Ephraim spoke, there was trembling and terror. He exalted himself in Yisrael, but threw the Lord Baal, and he did wrong, and he died. So fear does not come from Yahweh. That comes from religious notions.
And from the Lord. The Lord. The Lord is Satan.
Absolutely it does. And it comes from religious copy edits that are designed to change Yahweh's very nature.
And that's the issue. When you change Yahweh, who wants to be known as our Heavenly Father and the Father of the Covenant, which is someone you don't fear but instead revere, someone that you cuddle up next to, that you are so comfortable with that you sit right down next to him, you take long walks with him, you have comfortable open chats with him. With a father, you learn from and you get to express great love. The father's hand is the hand that you most want, if you're a son, on your shoulder. And yet a lord is someone who oppresses. A lord is someone who controls. You know, it's a lord's influence that you fear. That's why Yahweh describes Satan as the Lord. And so it's a complete reversal of Yahweh's testimony. And that's the reason why English translations of Yahweh's words are just so despicable. There's none that you can recommend. They're all rubbish.
Yeah, and that's one of the big questions I get all the time. What's the best, you know, religious book you can buy? You know,
there isn't one. And somebody might say, well, then I'm not going to learn Hebrew. I don't have the time for that. I'm working for a job, so I guess nobody can really know. I can't believe that God would make it that difficult to know Him. No, it's not difficult. It isn't difficult at all. Yeah,
you do point out though that one of the big mistakes that religious copy mm-hmm. editors make, or copy editors, translators in general make,
right,
is that they go out, they go with the last meaning of the word when they should go to the root of the word, the base of the
right.
word. What does it
right.
mean? Where did
right.
it start?
Yes.
And then you're going to get to actual meanings.
Right. And God goes off and tells us that that while his Torah is the source of perfect renewal of our souls, and therefore it's the Torah that saves us, he says that the Torah is easy to understand if you're open-minded. And so the point I want to make is that it's not difficult to understand what God has to say, even if you don't speak Hebrew, because there's marvelous tools that we can use that explain the words. All you have to do is probably 30 free interlinears online, which has the English and the Hebrew together. And there are probably 30 Hebrew-English dictionaries that are available free online. If you don't want to buy the tools, you can use them online for free, and you can go word for word and say, what does this word mean? And it's not hard. And God uses a very simple vocabulary in Hebrew. He repeats the same words and uses them over and over again. And he presents the same material from every possible perspective. It isn't difficult, but it does require an investment of one's time. You have to be willing to invest in this relationship for the relationship to be of any value to you or to God. And they should choose to actually take some of the blood and place it upon the two upright pillars of the doorway, and also upon the lintel, and that are on their homes, where their families live and where they eat this Passover. Then they should genuinely choose to eat and to be completely nourished by way of the flesh during the night. Roast it over a fire and always eat it over matzah and bitter herbs. Always eat it. A call, consistently and continually, written in the call imperfect. The call says, this is not to be interpreted hypothetically. This is not to be interpreted symbolically. This is real. This is actual. Actually, the imperfect means throughout time. There is no cessation of this connection. Always eat it over matzah, which is unyeasted bread, and bitter herbs. Never participate in Passover without it also being a celebration of matzah. You know what is quite clear in this regard, Larry, that his plan is 6 plus 1 equals 7. Creation, we're still on the sixth day of creation. Six days of creation leads to the seventh, the day of rest and reflection on our relationship with Yahweh. Mm-hmm. The Mikra are laid out. These invitations to meet with God are laid out in exactly the same format. There are six steps that lead us to God, with the first being the doorway to life, the second being the welcome mat to the threshold that perfects us, cleanses the fungus of yeast from our souls, the third being our adoption into God's family, and the seventh is the destination. It's the six steps lead to Sukkah, to camping out with God. Everything God prescribes for us is based upon this same plan. The Shabbat, the day that he says to keep as set apart, is 6 days we work, the seventh we spend celebrating our relationship with Yahweh. What it explains is the nature of God's formula, of his plan, of his purpose. It is what Hagee and Blixt missed in their book. They don't understand the relevance of seven. They don't even celebrate the Shabbat.
Well, they're participating in religion, and which, of course, Yahweh is not a religious deity. Mm-hmm. He doesn't appreciate
correct.
Anybody associating him with religion. So, of course, they're wrong. Yeah.
So here's Yahweh underscoring this 6 plus 1 equals 7. God's idea of man, who was conceived on the sixth day, plus God, who is one, being the perfect union, his covenant, if you will. He is telling us that even in the celebration of the first of these first three of these seven steps that lead to God, he's telling us that I want you to even celebrate this, recognizing the importance of seven. This is leading to seven. So the first day and the last day of the festival feast of matzah is a Shabbaton, is to be treated as a Sabbath. And therefore, God is telling you that, yeah, there's going to be 7 days of celebration here. Again, there's 7 days associated with Sukkah. There's 7 days where the first day begins with a celebration of the Sabbath. And then on Sukkah, he says, I want you to add one more day, the eighth day, because eight is symbolic of eternity, of eternal life in God's company. Because not only during the seventh day of human history, during the time from 6,000 Yah to 7,000 Yah, 2033 to 3033 on our pagan calendars, that is going to be the earth returned to the conditions that existed in the Garden of Eden. But that's not the end of time. It's the beginning. Then Yah was going to create a new universe where we get to exist with him forever. But God, by saying that there is a seventh day, 7 days associated with matzah, he's telling us that everything, just get it into your mind. Seven is the formula. It's always the answer. Always the answer is seven. And it's always six plus one of man with God that it creates the promise of seven. And it's emblazoned every place we look. But here now, God is also telling us that Passover, which is the gift of life, and matzah, which is the gift of perfection, should always be done together. Never, ever participate in Passover unless you're also going to celebrate matzah. In fact, celebrate Passover with matzah so that as you become immortal, you become perfect. It's a very important teaching that most people miss. We'll be back in a moment.